Welcome to the Ether. Today is Saturday, May 21st, 2022. Today on the Ether, part 4 of the 5-part CeFi space, Luna 2 strategies. Let's take a listen.
But what's his goal? So that's what I'm always asking myself.
Yeah. I think he lost a lot of money, like all of us, and he's kind of like looking back the whole time. And I think to go forward, we need to look forward, right? So I don't know. I don't see Do Kwon and the whole team doing malicious activity. I think they tried their best, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree too.
I think people should keep in mind, it's kind of silly, but it was Mother's Day weekend and he has like a brand new child. So like, like I think that's kind of like a interesting fact. Not that like I think it was malicious or planned or like whatever, but like he was probably busy and like I would like to think that, you know, he tried his best in a crisis situation and that it was not malicious, personally.
If it was malicious, you think he would have named his daughter Luna?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, exactly.
Also, you know, just because people are on, like, a board, right? Let's say you had, like, LFG and you have 5 people there or 10 people or whatever. It's not automatic that those people have a solution that's better than the individual solution. If you think about it, this is a very complicated, very crypto-specific problem. I don't know that I've seen Remy comment in any particular way regarding crypto that he knows enough about these types of market conditions to have like voted yay or nay for some sort of like multi-sig. So the most Do would have done was, you know, whoever the primary expert in the room would be, all they would do is say, hey, this is what we need to do. And everyone else would probably just parrot the vote yes anyway. Like realistically, what else are you going to do, right? I mean, you're going to say no. And then what if happens? Who takes responsibility if something goes wrong and you have no expertise in the matter? Like, right? Like if I was sitting there and I was voting and I didn't know the answer to this problem, like, am I going to vote for the person I believe has the most likely answer? Or am I just going to just vote no just because? Or what, right? It's voting in this context. I don't know. You'd have to have.
We saw a lot of people or validators actually just like every vote, there were like a designated number of validators that would immediately just vote no for quite a while in the governance. It was kind of interesting. And they weren't necessarily enough to like overturn stuff. But in the beginning of almost every vote was like the same amount of people or validators that just voted no, like immediately, like probably without researching it. I think because people get happy with the status quo and they just want to keep it how it is. So they become reluctant to like vote for change, which is not necessarily positive.
Did they
think about like, imagine how the executive branch of the government works, like in the US, like you have a Department of Defense, you have CIA, you have NSA or all these different people. And then you don't know for sure, you know, if you're the president or whatever, you don't know for sure that all of the information being given to you is accurate or even the best choice, right? You're just given some information. And then ultimately, someone has to just decide. The president doesn't automatically have, like, intelligence expertise. They don't necessarily have, you know, warfare expertise. They're hoping
in fact,
all
there's probably
people.
A good chance they might have stuff being maybe held from them because it could, like, cause a lot of indecision.
Exactly. So all of the information is being spoon-fed to you in a very specific sort of narrative. And, you know, if the, you know, CIA is pretty sure there's weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, then the president's going to be like, ooh, I don't want to leave those things there. People could die. And, you know, you see how this plays out. So accountability and in terms of leadership, there's a reason why, like, there's a separate executive branch and the president doesn't ask everyone's permission for everything. Is because there are some things that you just have to decide something. And your hope is that, like, because you voted for, you know, whichever dude is in office or whatever, like, hopefully they come up with something that's somewhat representative of the, what the public wants. That's about all you get, right?
It doesn't always go the best, but we try.
And especially, additionally, like in retro perspective, it's always easy to identify mistakes. And, you know, you always know what to do and what to have done better. But, I mean, in this situation, when there's so much stress, when the ship is going down, I think you need that one leader who's like, I mean, doing and proposing the things, and then you have to execute. And you don't have, you simply don't have the time to overthink the stuff. That's my thought on it.
And you know, the behavior in the federal government is a lot of avoiding the blame and trying not to be held accountable for things. So I would say, as governance goes, that like we're not doing so badly.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
I had to change networks here, so it might, like, my voice might be jacked up. But the whole like war room concept and what to do in it and how transparent they had to be. Just imagine all the tweets coming through, right? People complaining, people worried, all of those things. Every single tweet you read during that time influences your behavior as a person, right? It's gonna make you push one button versus the other. You have to decide whether to ignore all that shit and just kind of like do your thing, or you want to have like a peanut gallery in the room. So for example, like when I have a critical, you know, I do critical care. So like, you know, we have like things like CPR going on and people dying of different things. What we don't usually allow is we don't allow a bunch of family members to sit in the room while the whole thing's going on. Because the last thing you need to be worried about is like what the people on the side think while you're trying to do your job to the best of your ability, right? And that's another funny problem with social media is, on the one hand, you're trying to like solve some serious shit. And on the other hand, you're trying to answer people's tweets and whatnot, right? It seems like it's going to unduly influence you, you know, to do things that maybe you shouldn't, or maybe lose focus on what you're doing and think about, for example, when you have families in a room when someone's having a cardiac arrest, as an example, what you end up having is like you're sitting there trying to do like communicate with your team correctly. There's a lot of racket going on in the room. People are talking about this and that. You're more worried about like what you say coming out wrong versus actually doing your job. In other words, your brain is actually wired to like, you know, make sure that the family that's watching this whole fiasco taking place is actually like you're sort of like playing the director in a movie at that point. You're trying to make the movie look good, and you're not focusing necessarily on the actual production, right? You're trying to, you know, it's like running a play instead of a movie. And like, I don't know, that's the kind of like the analogy, I think. And you know,
what would have been the options anyway, like altering the blockchain? I mean, that would have increased the fear even more, right? If people wouldn't been able to move their assets.
Yeah, people talk about that. Why didn't you do a halt? And why didn't you do this? And why didn't you do that? A lot of those things have, you know, no relationship to reality.
Or like
not
spending the funds, like the $3.5 billion, to try and defend the pack. I mean, all right. The people would have been complaining afterwards.
Yeah, and if they people would have complained.
Yeah, exactly. No matter what happens, when the outcome is good, everyone's happy. When the outcome's bad, it's why didn't you do this and why didn't you do that instead? Exactly. It's a standard. Casey, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the frustrating part for me was, you know, I based my decision on what he first tweeted about trying to save UST, and that was their main goal. But then I think they realized that, you know, the network runs off the validators, and they can't just cut them out and leave them with nothing. Otherwise, there's no reason to even have a network running. But I mean, yeah, it was frustrating for me because I had all my dry powder in my UST, and, you know, I had 50 grand in Luna, $100,000 in UST. And I guess I would have made different decisions if that tweet came out differently. But obviously things are fluid and
that's
they
change. Yeah, that's a good point, actually, because, if you're in such an important position and then you tweet something like, and you spread hope, I think this really, really led also some people
to overthink the decisions. That was the only chance for the repack.
Keep in mind, people were also getting upset that he was not tweeting. So like, there really is no like winning in that scenario. Like, I like to think that they tried their best.
If you would have tweeted like, okay, the ship is going down, then immediately like 15 billion US dollar would have tried to flood the market, and there would have been crushing like even more. So the only option he had was to like increase hope and try to defend the peg.
Yeah, and people were really getting frustrated that like there was silence. Keep in mind, like, I remember at that time it was like he does need to come out. Someone needs to say something, like, regardless of what it is, like, something needs to be said, because like everything is obviously going wrong right now.
I mean, was he in touch with the validators at that point, just not talking to the world?
I'm sure that there was a lot of communication going on, trying to, I'm not sure. I would like to think that, you know, there was a lot of communication going on, and Twitter is not like how they're communicating with each other. And it would be ludicrous, in my opinion, to think they could put all of their communications onto Twitter in a form that we can comprehend in the same way. Like, that's like absurd to even expect. So, I mean, I would hope that they were communicating.
Yeah, but I think the problem was the inconsistency in communication. Before, there was a lot of communication going on about some, let's say, stupid things. But then in the crisis mode, there was silence. And then, of course, people were hoping to hear something. But yeah, it's of course, it's a very difficult situation.
And remember, there's a lot of people that aren't even on Twitter, right? Like, they aren't even paying attention to this. So
a ton of people
that like to play on Twitter, like us, the reality is we're looking at it more frequently and like paying attention. A lot of other people were not. So do you benefit the people only on Twitter? That's the other problem, right?
That's a good point.
Like, how does that work exactly?
Right.
So, in other words, no matter what they do, it would have picked losers and winners, depending on your particular situation at that time, right? So, not to mention, there are people that legitimately were routine short sellers on the market, and their positions get affected by various actions that happen, right? And this is the reason why, like, normally for stocks and things, people don't like the concept of insider trading. They want to be sure that, like, whatever outcome happens, the playing field was even for everybody, technically speaking. And that's oftentimes not the case, no matter what you do, but whatever.
I mean, coulda, shoulda, woulda, right?
I know it.
Exactly.
There was one guy that must have known how the mechanics of it worked, and he did a $300 50x short on Luna and made $600,000.
Yeah, but that's more gambling, I think.
Well, I mean, if you know how the work, it's going to keep inflating. I mean, the price has got to go down, right?
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I see myself being responsible for my losses because I put all the eggs in one basket, and that's just stupid, because number one rule in investing is diversifying. So I learned it the hard way, I guess.
Yeah, like you, I kind of was thinking, all right, it's in a stable coin, it's going to be stable, so it's not really taking a risk, but I fucked up on that one.
Yeah, but I think that's also like my responsibility to know, like, where's the yield coming from, like the 18, 19, 20%, what are the risks associated with that? That's such a high yield without risk, you know? It's just not.
Well, the way I looked at that yield was their marketing cash. Like, I mean, if you want to bring people into an ecosystem, yeah, it might cost you $500 million, $500 billion, but that's what I was looking at, is because they were just dumping money in there to get people into the ecosystem. Exactly. And then at that point, the rate would go down.
Yeah, but that's what also, I don't know if you read it, but Delphi did a good research or comment on this, because they also evaluate the situation. And basically, they also said that this could be a reason for the fast crash of the ecosystem, because it was not an organic growth of the ecosystem, because it was incentivized. And this was always a lot of critics also before this all happened, that this yield is not sustainable, and maybe if on other chains, maybe there will be 30% or 20%, and on Luna it drops, maybe these people who get attracted by this high yield will leave the chain. And in this case, it could be a reason for this fast exit.
But I think for now we should look forward and I mean, maybe in a year or 2 years time, when we think about doing another decentralized stablecoin, then we should look back and think about what technical aspects we could have done better. But for now, I think we should concentrate on Luna V2 and make the best out of it, because Terra clearly has the best UI and the best interface and super nice community. And that are valuable goods that should be protected. And that's why I think we shouldn't be so salty about what happened, and we should think about the future more.
Yeah, that's true. Also a question that I ask myself, because before Luna, the whole use case was about this stable coin. And this is what also Delphi Digital stated in their review document, that this was the main thing that attracted them. And my question is now, regarding Luna 0.2, what will happen?
We can do exactly the same.
I think you have the degen left. You know, there's this whole constituency of people that just got made fun of the whole time because they didn't hold too much UST. And now it doesn't matter because we all got wiped out. So we're all on an equal playing field. The degen like to hold Luna, and I think they're going to stick around for the DeFi.
I'll be here.
I'll be here for sure. I like pressing buttons. It's not about the USTs necessarily. And you're correct, like for the masses and the mainstream adoption, like UST was very important. But there is, I think, a pretty loyal constituency of like degens that are going to stick around, hopefully.
That's why I asked the question earlier, like what you guys think the yield could be, what yield could be achieved with a lending protocol using USDC. So, because as we said, like, the 20% were so attractive that we had like exponential growth basically. But I mean, with a 12% maybe, if that's feasible, market could have like steady and organic growth, which
I think at some point rates are not maybe the correct metric. Like that's what we're seeing, and I could be wrong, but like every network is trying to gain users and stuff using APYs that are unsustainable. It's quite possible these yields just are unsustainable with how people behave and not on a mathematical level, because like you can put a lending platform on a chain that has X rate and people will use it in different ways. Like they're not all doing the same thing. So behaviors will change. And it's really like a ton of like very, very difficult to predict factors. I don't know if we can guess, you know, what rate will ever sustain like growth.
Yeah, Justin Sun's USD. DD sounds good at 30%, but it's all bullshit in my opinion.
Yeah, it's not going to be sustainable, but like I've accepted that because I came into this like later and in the blockchain space doing DeFi. Like it's okay to have an unsustainable yield and you might have to shift capital. And I think Luna kind of tricked everyone, because I slowly ended up shifting just entirely into Luna because I was like, this is just working better than everything. But like I learned DeFi on Polygon, and like you're dreaming if you think you're going to find a deflationary like store of value token. So you can still make money in those ecosystems. You're just doing it by harvesting the yield and converting it to other assets and stuff. And it takes a little more knowledge and skill, I think.
100%.
Yeah, making money in the like LP game is not that easy unless you're going to like enter and exit into these things sort of like you know, expecting pumps and dumps to some extent, but always right. Go ahead, man.
Hey, Sefi. I know earlier, I hopped on late, but I know earlier you were talking a little bit about some other ecosystems, some other coins that looked interesting. Just had a question for you. Just want to get your thoughts. I know you talked to the Cardano guys a few days ago. Did they mention anything, say, in the next 6 months that might be exciting that they're releasing, or do you know anything that looks interesting that's being built on that? I know there's a project called Tempi, which is like a decentralized search engine. I don't know much about it, but it sounded like an interesting idea. Just kind of want to get your thoughts on your conversation.
Tempi is not so much built on it. The token is, I don't know if it's a native ETH token or if it's a native Cadena token, but it's on both chains available. And the token is involved with like paying for the people that provide services on that network. So I don't know how good the token is from like a like buy and hold type of perspective. What seemed to me interesting about that particular project was the potential for using a standard computer to provide the node and search services. And maybe the way to go with that one is looking at the ROI in the next, and pretty soon they're going to release their software, but you'll be able to earn their tokens using your personal computer, and think of it as like mining the token itself, right? So that that way you're getting the token like at the lowest price possible. And you can apparently do this with like more normal computers. And I think you're going to get some benefits if you have like more cores on your computer and shit like that. But I was looking at it from that angle. And I actually did a Twitter Spaces, Terra Spaces recorded it, where I actually grilled the Timpy people. The guy is pretty sharp. He's like an AI dude. And really has some exciting stuff. So I would look at it from that angle. I don't know about buying the coin though. It is available on Kadena, and I believe it's available on, it was on Katie Launch. Katie Launch and Katie Swap are run by the same people, I believe. And I believe it's on Katie Swap if you want the token. But I don't know if the tokenomics favor holding the token better or just mining the thing with your computer. So something to definitely look at. Kadena had some sort of controversy with the IDO of the CADEX thing. I'm not sure I fully understand it. I haven't gotten them on the phone to like ask them what the hell happened, but there was some Twitter controversy about like the fairness of the launch and, you know, some sort of, I don't know what. Anyway, long story short, like that the DEXs are slowly opening up. Katie Swap is now open. And various projects are actually emerging on Kadena now, as well as like a pretty innovative NFT platform called Marmalade, which will allow like interesting coding of NFTs. So definitely some serious work being done by serious coders on that platform. So, but at the same time, like, I don't have a really strong intuition about its tokenomics and, you know, like the price appreciation of the coin and things of that nature. Lot to kind of think about with that one. Do you have any kind of specific, I think maybe he dropped off. I don't know what happened to his connection, but anyway, that's kind of Kadena in a nutshell. There's a lot going on there. It's a legit chain.
Guys, I would like to give away 3 Luna Punks to the community just because we all lost so much last week and I was able to pick some up for cheap. So maybe just DM me your story, what happened last week and what you lost, and then I'll decide on who I give away these punks. And the rarity will be between 8 and 12.
Yeah. Hit him up for that, guys.
I can't DM you.
Or follow him first, I guess. YK, what's up?
Sefi?
Yeah, go ahead.
I also had a question regarding Kadena, because sure, go ahead. One thing that really makes me think about, because it's a proof of work algorithm, and especially in Europe, we have the problem with, or not the problem, but the hot topic with sustainability. And I also, you made a tweet about this, and then I commented on it, and then some Kadena guys jumped on, but they couldn't deliver any specific numbers regarding Kadena. What does it cost, the proof of work algorithm in terms of energy, and also in comparison to Bitcoin or proof of stake and things like this? Do you have any insights on this, or
what's the cost, your take? The cost per transaction on Kadena is super, super low, generally in terms of energy costs. The exact numbers I don't have off the top of my head. Cost to the user is sort of subsidized, so the cost is actually going to wind up being almost free for a transaction, so that's not a big deal. Right now, the main thing on Kadena is there's not that much to do there, right? Like, there's only, like, you know, 4 or 5 coins, and you know, practically limited dApps. I think there's some NFT type platform. There's some gaming coming there, but there's just not that much to do there. Like, you know, it's like you own the coin and just sort of like wait, I guess. So it doesn't have a lot of the DeFi activities that people have come to expect yet. So that'll be over the next year or so. And there is a little bit of work in developing tooling so that people can learn the Pact language quicker, so they can create the smart contracts and all of that. So yeah, there's definitely, it's definitely a more long-term thing. Exactly like what's a good price to buy it at and stuff like that, I'm not 100% sure. It is into the range of like where it was pre or like right around the beginning of bull market. So it's pulled back a lot. Its price discovery, though, was mostly during the recent bull market. So, you know, is it possible that the price could go lower, you know, much, much lower than the bull market low? I mean, the bull market, the opening price, I guess it's possible. So just be aware that if you're involved, there's like ultra volatility involved. And what I'm doing is, I'm just kind of watching it, and I've been picking a little bit of it up as prices drop, and eventually I'll just transfer it to my wallet and just hold it there and call it a day. So I'm not overthinking it too much. I'm just acquiring some here and there. YK, I think, was trying to get on.
Hello, guys. Thank you so much for letting me speak, and thank you so much for coming, you know, John, in one of my spaces. I just want to say I'm a very honest person. I never bought Luna, but after what happened and everything, I started to, you know, research and, you know, asking questions about what happened. I'm one of the Luna agents. I'm honest. And I bought also Luna, and I'm not selling. It's not a financial advice, but I'm just telling you guys what I'm doing. I bought Luna and I'm not selling. I don't really care if we're going to go for V2 or we're going to go for the burn. It doesn't matter what. I'm going to be holding because I see a lot of people, you know, who has, lost their money and it, lost their money and everything. So I'm going to stick, you know, to the community. And if we're going to moon, we're all going to moon together. If I'm going to lose, I would be at least, you know, someone who tried to be there for the community too. So for everybody, I just want to say the community, if you are feeling sad or you're depressed or anything, it's money, you know. Think about your health. As long as you can breathe, as long as you have your family, there is always a chance in life. You know what I mean? Never give up. And if you ever need anybody to speak to or anything, the community of Luna is huge. I have never seen such community, you know. So I'm so happy and glad. I'm even like proud to be a part of this movement. I love everybody here. And I'm so, oh my God, I was about to say some bad words. I'm trying to be respectful.
You can say whatever you want. It's cool.
Okay. I'm so fucking livid about Luna. And guys, I don't even give shit about the money. All what I want to do is to be one of this history of Luna, and I want to encourage everybody. If you feel bad, this is not gonna help you. Your feet is not gonna help you. Please be, focusing and live your life and trust the process. And whatever what happens, we are all human beings. We are all here, and I'm gonna keep pushing. I'm never gonna stop. Either we go and recover or go to zero. I don't really give a fuck. Thank you so much, Sefi.
That's cool. I would caution though, like people shouldn't necessarily jump in and just sort of gamble on whatever prices. I think buy it if you want to buy the old token, buy it. But just realize like some people are holding right now, like people that got wrecked who have Luna, who have UST, have their Luna maybe in a wallet somewhere. They're holding it because they're waiting for like the snapshots to get done to see about the new chain. And validators and such are largely going to be interested in the new chain, probably. I don't know exactly what type of, I don't know if like how long the old chain is going to sort of go on. is it going to go on indefinitely and the validators are going to just keep like running it or not? I don't really know. So that's something to be aware of. I think if you have like what we were talking about earlier, and I don't know if you were here before, but like, I'm just going to look and see how much of the new Luna token I get for my assets I have. And then, you know, we've been kind of looking, you know, developers and NFT platforms, and everybody, they keep building shit. And the hope would be that like there's some additional value that's added to that new token and to the new layer one. It's not exactly a fork. It's really just a brand new chain is the way you want to think about it. And think about the airdrop as just a distribution mechanism for the token. But I'm not really expecting it to go up a lot. Hopefully it's worth something. And hopefully my snapshot gets me some Luna. I don't know. We'll find out how it goes. So yeah, good luck with that. And
can I say only one thing more, please, yeah. Sefi? Sure. Because I was at work and I was listening sometimes. I just want to say something nobody said here. Let's fucking go!
The enthusiasm is awesome. All right, that's cool.
I will be listening, guys.
That's cool. Good catching up. Always have fun. That's the thing. We can even have wrecked. We can even have fun being wrecked, right? Like that's cool
too. We're gonna show everybody what the new lunatics gonna be doing. I'm very positive, and I think the new lunatics gonna share the history. I love you guys, everybody. I'm listening. I'm sorry.
That's cool. Felix, did you have any comments, or Casey?
Yeah, LFG doesn't have the same meaning to me anymore, but yes.
That's a good point.
I'm kind of curious on what everybody's feeling is about the 21-day lockup. Is anybody going to stick to liquid staking from now on? Because I know that lockup should just kill people as validators. It killed me, so.
Well, we're not going to have the death spiral anymore because we don't have UST, right? So I don't see...
I guess I'm talking about any network in general, though.
Personally, that was why I liked B-Luna and like the staked Luna derivatives was because I liked to have that capital flexibility. So I hope that they consider B-Luna in this for that reason, because that was technically going to be a staked form, and that was like a liquid staked form in a sense.
No, I would always arbitrage B-Luna and then burn it, but you still got to wait 21 days to burn it, I guess. But
yeah, right. Well, some people just played like when it was at a 1-to-1, they would exit and stuff. Not everyone did that burn, but yeah, most people did exactly what you're talking about. Yeah,
as a traditional Cosmos Layer 1 chain, you don't really have the kinds of like systemic risk problems. You don't have the systemic risk problems comparatively. I guess any chain could technically go to zero for some crazy ass event, but like the odds are much, 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 much lower.
Right,
and if you don't stake a proof of stake asset, you're sort of like giving up the yield to people that do, and the relative value of your coins in the network are going down. So I think what some people do is they'll have some staked coins for the purposes of like governance and for yield generation, and then other people and the same people will oftentimes have unstaked coins that they use just for speculative purposes, if they as a means of diversification. I think if you're buying like during like a really fast upward swing in a bull market, one could argue maybe you shouldn't stake it right away, that like, you know, maybe try to trade it. And if you're buying at the very, very bottom, like in a bear market situation, you pick up some and you stake it and you leave it alone, maybe, you know. So right now, like if I'm looking at proof of stake chains, I'm looking for stuff that I'm going to stake and hold and just like leave it there, right? Because that's the best way to play that. And then in a bull market, technically, one of the ways to diversify out would be to sell all the yield that you've accumulated, or, you know, maybe not auto compound your yield, right? Because there's auto compounding or compounding your yield by continually like restaking it. Or there's taking that yield and when the price goes up, deciding to sell on the way up. So there's different like formulas you can use to decide what to do with your yield as well. One argument could be made that your diversification could start right at the beginning. So let's say I have Atom and I stake it and it's got like a 15% yield and I'm getting my yield every like month, right? Or something like that. I could just take that and just sell it as a means of diversification. Maybe I'm like exiting the net, I'm dollar cost averaging out of the network on a regular basis. So even though I'm losing part of my valuation in that network, maybe the answer is that that's part of your DCA out, right? So there's different ways to think about how to use your yield. Like I took my yield from Adam and bought more Luna on the dips, which I would have better off just holding my Atom or selling it, I suppose, in retrospect, obviously. But
yeah, it was all a bad trade if we look back.
Yeah, exactly. It's a big shit trade if you look backwards. So
at least with my liquid staking on Stator, at least that still got value. But other than that, yeah, I kind of did a couple different things. I did the arbitrage. I did just a little bit of staking. So I had some governance voting and then, just liquid staking and what else. Yeah, that was about it, really.
I technically had like almost everything in Prism, which all I had to do is like unclaim my Y Luna and I could sell it for something, right?
Right.
And because you could swap it on the Prism swap. And then I was able to, like, I had to clear some of my borrows by clearing out my bonded Luna. And eventually I was able to, like, exit some of that. So I didn't go, like, 0-0 because of that. But bonded Luna was, I lost some because, like, there was a premium or loss selling from bonded Luna to Luna. So some of those issues took place, but at least it was somewhat liquid.
Yeah.
So I didn't have at that moment like purely staked Luna. Almost all of mine was Prism or it was in bonded form in a borrow. And those I was able to clear out a little bit easier. But the people that were like, quote unquote, the safest, right? Like the craziest thing is the safest thing you could have done normally would be to stake, right? That's the safest.
Right.
So the fact that the people that staked got screwed the most is a little bit weird, right? Like it's, you could almost argue that during the snapshot, the true pure staker should be actually reimbursed better than everyone.
100%, man. Yeah.
Like what the fuck, right? Like, I mean, you actually had not only you couldn't even sell. So your snapshot of your staked Luna should be at the Genesis should be worth way more than people that didn't have the opportunity to stake. So, in other words, if you were pre and post snapshots, right, and you were staked the entire time, that should get you the highest yield, highest return on snapshots, in my opinion.
Yeah, we need a new proposal out there for sure.
So,
No, don't.
Yeah.
Please don't.
we're never going to actually get these started, basically.
I know, so, right?
Yeah, and I don't even know if my bonded Luna that I had is going to be snapshotted or not. Like, I might get zero in this whole thing. Who knows? Of course. I don't know, like, my Y Luna, did that get anything? Or my P Luna or whatever shit, right? Like, I don't even know if I'm getting anything.
Yeah.
No idea. I might get a grand total of zero in all this. Who knows?
But, Safi, do you know what's with the Astroport? Because, actually, the funny thing was I participated in the log drop of Astroport. And because of the impermanent loss, let's say it like this, I made a whole lot of Luna now. And this could also benefit actually for the snapshot, but I'm not sure.
See, now you're now the proud owner of a billion Luna?
I'm still compounding. I'm still
billion, but
compounding Luna, like might as well, right?
Yeah, so Philip, the only thing I do not know is whether they're going to actually snapshot the LP. Or whether you have to exit that LP to be on the snapshot. I don't know the answer to that.
That's a big question.
The second thing I don't know, and because I know that they're doing snapshots on Osmosis and some of the other DEXs, maybe even Thorchain. So they're doing some external snapshots. I would think they're going to snapshot Astroport LPs, but if you're not sure, it's going to be probably better off exiting the LP. What I don't know if you do that is if that's going to affect any sort of Astroport snapshots if they do one. I'm assuming that it's not going to have any relationship, but I don't really know.
The problem is I can't exit. I can't exit because it's locked for...
you're in the lock drop portion. Yeah,
my lock drop. The governance proposal, so I think that's going to unlock.
Yeah, my lock drop is still stuck right now.
There's not so much participation now at the moment.
I'm
at the governance
into Thorchain because I mean, as long as I keep it in there 100 days, and I'm protected with that liquidity protection, and they're actually giving out a bunch of rune because of it.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and I saw that a lot of people were exiting and getting pretty wrecked, so that might be something to keep in mind for anyone who's in those pools. I'm not.
But Rune is interesting, yeah, how they compensate for this.
Yeah, because they had
take a lot of more than 100 days. Yeah.
Yeah, as long as you keep it in 100 days, you got your protection. So anything that was, I mean, if my UST goes to zero, my Luna goes to zero, then it'll be replaced with Rune. As long as you have a Rune address attached to it, I assume. Otherwise, they can't send it to you, right?
That's going to be a big hit to Thorchain there, financially, potentially.
And they're showing the numbers that they had to give a lot out of their pool. So I mean, out of their community, you know.
Well, imagine too if people hold that 100 days and like if a bunch of people got in around the same time, like they're gonna have to pay out a lot of Rune token to cover that impermanent loss if it like goes to zero.
It's probably why the price is dropping quite.
Yeah, that could be gnarly actually.
Mo, did you have another comment or?
Yes, I would like to ask a question since we also started talking about looking forward. So we already talked about maybe impending recession and everything. And my assumption usually was, okay, just buy and hold and everything. And I have a fairly low share of Bitcoin and Ethereum in my portfolio. Now I'm wondering, like, damn, everybody is writing, maybe some altcoins won't survive and just holding won't be enough. So is it wise to actually sell some alts even when they're down pretty bad in order to switch to Bitcoin to have like a safer portfolio? Or what would you guys do?
That's a pretty complicated question. It depends on what they are and how low you're willing to let them ride and how long you're willing to let them, from a time perspective. But I don't know that necessarily, like from the bottoms, crypto won't see like a pretty good, even a bear market rally or like a dead cat bounce type of situation. Because the money on the sidelines in crypto is not all the same money in the general market necessarily. So I don't know if the right thing to do is like mess around with your altcoins necessarily. I'm actually buying more of them. So whatever I had before, I'm just sort of like adding to those positions. They're so much dramatically cheaper now that I can like, you know, double and triple my coin counts pretty readily. And that's sort of what I'm doing.
If you're not in layer ones, then I would recommend thinking about something else, but layer ones are the safest bet.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably true.
So I had like 50% in my portfolio. Oh, sorry.
But I think Sefi made a good point. If you look from today's perspective and you would also buy the coin today for the current prices, then it's a good indicator that you should hold them. But if you say today, I don't know if I should hold them, then it's probably a good indicator that you should sell them for Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever. Yeah.
Now, it depends on how much of a gambler you are, right? Like for example, let's take Litecoin today at like $70. Is it possible that it could lose 50% of its value such that if you sold it today and bought it back lower, you'd do better? Maybe, right? Like that's possible. But you're making some assumptions there. And I think at this point, once you've already lost 90% of the price action of a coin, anything like this you would have considered, you should have done it like months ago. And it just doesn't make sense now anymore, right? Like, so the only thing that I can do rationally is to add to positions if I believe in them. But selling super low, like the loss is so substantial that it's almost meaningless at that point. So I usually try not to do that if I can.
One of the frustrating things about trading is by the time you notice it's too low, is like by the time you psychologically are like, I should sell, it's probably already too late unless you're like way ahead of the game.
100%.
Yeah, remember Philip when we talked about this like a year ago almost at this time. People in October were asking like, okay, I'm going to sell in X month because I think that's going to be when the like bear market begins or something like that, right?
Yeah, there's a fractal that I have.
Yeah, but imagine, so technically speaking, if you define the bear market as below the 200-day moving average, Bitcoin's been in a bear market since January already, technically.
So, oh, yeah.
You know, by the time you figure out, like, hey, wait, I'm in the bear market, like, now is not when the bear market's begun. It's already well underway. That's January, February, March, April, May. We're 5 months in already. So, like, how long do these things last? I don't know. Anywhere from, let's say, 6 months to, let's say, 2 years, let's say, right? Or maybe 3 years, let's say. You know, you're already like a portion of the way through it. I don't know if it makes sense to sort of mess with your positions too much at this point. I could be wrong though. Like, you know, maybe everything goes down another 80%. Who the hell knows, right?
Yeah, that may depend on the positions as well. Like if things are pretty speculative in one's portfolio, they might cut losses, but that's a tough question. I'm definitely not advising either way.
And if yeah, which is why like your allocations matter. If you're in a bunch of shit coins and stuff, like ultra shit coins, of which apparently Luna is one of them, if you're then you know your allocations theoretically should be pretty small, in which case you don't have to worry about it. Like so, for example, if I have $100 worth of some video game token or some shit, like I should be able to 10x my position at this point for $1,000 and be okay, right? So. That's the kind of way to think about little micro projects is go into them really, really small, especially in bullish market conditions. And especially if you're intending to be like a long-term holder, you have to go super, super tiny. And then kind of like watch for, serious drops, but generally in crypto, like the time where you consider buying is typically something like, anything more than 60% drop from a top is usually a good time during a bull market condition. And then in a bearish market condition, it's, you know, anything that is more than 80% drop from the top would be considered pretty normal in a highly speculative market. So that's how to look at this. And we don't even know how much BTC can drop from the top yet, right? There's no guaranteed like bottom in that regard. We do know that like a lot of leverage positions were entered at 20K plus because of the breakout from the prior 2017 high.
Yeah.
And are those leverage positions, are they going to close their positions increasingly as price drops? Sure. So, you know, can you actually revisit the prior breakout? I hope not, but it's not impossible at all. We already went
down to where we are right now.
Yeah, we already went to 25K as of like the latest dump,
which is below like the trend, like major bottom for any of like the new 2020 market participants. 29K is like the long-standing bottom, where basically like anyone who got into that point psychologically thinks like that's the bottom because that's the lowest they've ever seen it go. So we actually just broke below like a very long-term trend psychologically.
Yeah, which then leads to some like psychological selling and whatnot. So yeah.
Oh yeah, they bailed.
Yeah. Casey,
I think that's what we saw was all those people spooking, at least in my circles, like my friends that were not on Twitter and like aware, like they're pretty much scared out of the market right now because they don't think there's anything good going on.
Yeah, yeah, man, I'm super scared as well. I lost like 50% of my fucking net worth due to that Luna shit and like a whole dry powder, and it's fucking retarded. So I'm questioning.
I just hope we stay right bearish now. For that reason. I want to stay bearish because I need time to like get capital and get back into it. Like, so at this point, I'm a bear. Call me a bear.
Right. Yeah, the Bitfinex longs on Bitcoin are all time highs. So it's kind of interesting. I think people. The smart money saying we're going up, but who knows? In 2 weeks, though, we got a conference coming up, a couple of them. So every time a conference happens, I always short the market because without doubt, every time that shit happens, the market's dropping.
I swear there's just a select like group of Bitcoiners that just are antisocial. They don't go to conferences and they're just upset that everyone's partying, so they dump it like every time.
Right, I know. And is anybody going to Austin or not? I know our Luna conference got fucked up, but anybody else going there?
I wasn't planning to originally, so I don't know. I don't know what's happening with that. Has there been an announcement as far as like people?
I heard it was called off. Yeah, the Luna event.
There might be some people still going. If you might want to like send out some tweets about it, see if people are still there because they got rooms or some other shit and they're just going anyway.
There are like a lot of other conferences in Austin for other blockchain things around that time as well. So I think probably a lot of people will go.
Yeah, you got Decentral and you got Consensus and you got a bunch of great parties. So I'll definitely be there for a week. So
supposed to be a cool one coming up in the Bay Area in July. I haven't actually looked into it, Block Space or something. So I don't know if I might go to that one.
Hey, Zevi.
Go ahead, man.
I was looking to the Elron thing that you mentioned. Really great UI. I can say that maybe twice as good as Terra one, really professional. The wallet and then the DEX that they have is really great. Not much liquidity and not much anything else, not just the DEX, but looks really great in comparison with Cadena. Cadena looks like they need 3-4 years more of development and the UI is not really good. And now the DEX that they have is they found a vulnerability and it's shut down. They shut down everything almost. So if I need to pick, I think Elron looks really promising.
Yeah, one of the guys I was talking to talks about Elron as being what Ethereum 2.0 wants to be, but started out with like a major sharded platform from the very beginning. But yeah, their user experience is badass, right? Isn't it? It's beautiful, isn't it?
It looks like for enterprises or something like it's, I mean, we are so used to these tools that look like shit. This look amazing. I mean, I'm a developer and in these 20 years and I know shitty UIs and good UIs. And this is really great. And if they continue
it's top rate. Yeah, I was telling people this. People should download the MyR wallet. How do you spell it? M-A-I. Fuck. Hold on a second. Let me pull the.
It's M-A-I-A-R.
M-A-I-A-R, MyR wallet. And the wallet's created by the original Elron team. And, it has some security features that allow you to, like, using your cell phone with an encrypted, verification. And you can basically recover your wallet if you happen to have your cell phone or an Apple iCloud account and some other shit. So they put some nice like retail friendly security features in. You don't have to be like a Ledger nerd to necessarily figure out how to use it. And apparently they have some like licenses and stuff in Europe where they're going to be onboarding like some maybe credit and debit card type things and some banks and whatnot. So they're more kind of on the line of like regulatory compliant type of chain. So it's different.
Enterprise. It looks like to sell to some kind of company. So, which is maybe not good for crypto, the crypto guys, but who cares? Who knows? But I don't care. I mean, if Eagle or whatever the token name is, how you pronounce, if it moves, I would buy it. I don't care.
Felix, like, number go up? Good.
No, yeah. One question about the tokenomics now, just because I was... So finite supply or...
Yeah, what it is that the yield is also capped so that, like, if you look at the app, it'll show you on the earn section, like, how many validators have capped off their yield. So you can get the yield until like the number of participants that can get yield is capped off and then it sort of like stops there. So it definitely favors the early participant in terms of yield. As far as like what the right price to buy this at, I bought a little bit like as soon as the guys mentioned it to me on you know, Friday or Thursday or something. And I was like, all right, I'll get some. So I bought some, populated the wallet, and just started like looking at it. I haven't done that much like playtime in there yet. And I haven't talked to any team people to kind of like figure out, you know, what kind of shit's coming down the line. But I figured like, since we're in bearish conditions, it almost doesn't matter what coin it is, things will start to fall. So I bought some at $90 and I figured like, you know, anywhere between $50 to $90 looks all like good prices for this one in terms of overall market cap and dynamic. Yes, so
the best thing of the team and everyone looks like they already have all the coins that are going to be distributed, because you see the chart there, they put the spreadsheet where they put all the vesting. It's like everyone is already almost holding the supply. So if they didn't sell yet, or maybe they are, I'm not really worried about that dilution that we will have, for example, in Terra. But for in this case, look like not so bad.
Yeah, it looks good.
Okay.
Has anybody messed around with Near Protocol much? I do like them, but I don't know if anybody else has any opinions. They got a good DeFi platform.
Yo, guys, I got to head out. It was a pleasure to talk to you guys, and hope to speak to you soon again.
Yeah, good having you on.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
See you later.
On Near, any of you guys use Near, or anybody in the audience that's used Near? I haven't used it at all, so I'm not sure how.
That is not like some kind of a scam or something. Like.
Sorry, if you're asking if Near is a scam.
I'm not sure. That I heard somebody say, you know, and crypto everything is a scam.
A lot of people are worried about the 30% yield, I think is what he's referencing, which is probably a fair concern. Is like whether a 30% stablecoin yield is a safe play at this point is probably what I'm guessing the scam that was referenced.
That's with Thorchain. I think Near is only about 10 right now, but I'm sorry, not Thorchain. What the fuck's it called? Justin Sun's project, Tron. Sorry. Yeah.
Near is only 10 and Tron is 30. Maybe I mixed those up.
Yeah. But I mean, no, they definitely have an interesting. I mean, it's like ETH. What ETH should have been. It has sharding and all that stuff. But hopefully, it's no more scam than Luna. I don't know. I don't think Luna was a scam either, but I just, you never know with crypto, right? We can go.
It's all a scam when you lose your money. It just hurts too bad to admit it otherwise.
I would just say that definitely Near looked really good until everything happened to Luna. But yeah, it was 20%. They were just going to do what pretty much they were forking Luna.
I remember some resentment in the Luna community over that.
Yeah, I think they wanted to start with 20. I don't know if it ended up going that way, but
So, in other words, Casey, you're telling me you're going to put your life savings in it, right?
Yeah, it's the next Luna. Put everything you have.
I'm going to go with Justin's son and put all my money back in there and just hope it lasts. No, I don't think any of us are doing that anymore. I think we've all learned a valuable lesson. It was worth a lot of money, but I'm definitely looking at the world a little differently nowadays.
Everything KC makes at McDonald's is going right into that Near yield reserve into stable coin.
I'll be working at McDonald's with Michael Saylor here pretty soon.
Sid, did you want to make a point, comment?
Hi, can I go?
Go for it, man. What's up?
I'm sure this has been addressed earlier, but what happens to Luna holders that held Luna on exchanges? Because most of my Luna was on Binance. Just if I can get some clarity on this, that'd be great.
Binance, I don't use Binance right now, but does Binance have a Terra native wallet for you, or do you use a memo there
for deposits? We use a memo.
Yeah, if it's a memo based, I'm not sure what you're going to be getting, because if it's an exchange that gives you your own wallet address, then you could probably just paste that address and ultimately pick up an airdrop. If it's on an exchange, maybe the exchange will claim the airdrop and somehow deliver it to you, but I'm not sure how they would do it.
I think there's a better chance, sadly, and who knows, hopefully that they do the right thing. But there's a long-standing problem in DeFi where people think a centralized exchange is a safe place to stake to get airdrops, and they don't get airdrops because of this wallet thing that he's talking about. You're not actually in effect using a Terra wallet. They're using a Terra wallet. They have one big wallet and they're distributing it accordingly because of the memos. So it's really up to like the good nature of the exchange to give you this airdrop that they're probably actually entitled to because they own the wallet. So hopefully that pans out.
I know Binance lost a shit ton of money on Luna, but I don't think they're going to steal your money. CZ sounds like a pretty good guy, but who knows?
Well, yeah. Is it stealing though? Because
you never know. Yeah.
Well, it thanks, is their guys. Wallet though. Like in effect, it's their wallet. So that's the problem here.
No, definitely.
You actually owe Binance money right now. They're going to send their debt collectors after you.
All right.
Jeez, yeah.
Binance becomes the next credit bank.
Let me get, I think a couple of, there's all sorts of folks waiting to chat, so we'll see if anyone wants to come on. I've been kind of running this all day just to kind of, learn quite a bit of things from people. Learned about kind of what Luna's approximately worth based on, some of the comments that were made earlier. And we were just kind of talking about like strategies earlier and how to invest in Terra 2 and things like that earlier today. And I think I'm like, I like chatting with everyone to kind of flesh out my ideas in my head based on what people are saying as far as like the direction to take. But Tokir, what's up, man?
Hey man, my Twitter has been like, on and off working. So I don't think like, you use Memo while you withdraw or deposit Terra, but it does go through the Terra station. So I was just going to clear that. And second thing was, as I told you earlier, and I was a few days back, and I was telling other guys that one particular project that I want to talk about is a very unique kind of a concept that came across us recently. So it's from Animoca Brands, Sandbox, Ubisoft, a lot of G10, all of these particular companies come together. And there is this game which involves around 80 plus authors from Game of Thrones, from Lord of Rings, from they have a couple of from Harry Potter. So that particular project came across us and we have been working in, and we invested in that too, and we are helping them in marketing as well. We just had one mint yesterday and we sold out the mint of 500 whitelists, I don't know, within like 15 or 16 seconds. I don't think it even took that long. So I was just going to tell, if anyone who is interested in getting a whitelist in that sort of a project, I'm sure that everyone knows that how big of a thing it is, that if it's a Animoca brand or a Ubisoft kind of a project based on seven novels written by these 80 authors. If anyone is interested, especially from the Terra community, let me know. And Sefi, another thing is that I think day after tomorrow, 29th. No, 29th is late. So 29th, I'm planning to host a couple of spaces where we have some $4,000 to $5,000 cash giveaway, which I have got an allocation from another project, which I will disclose then. There is nothing that you have to do and blah, 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 blah. And I specifically had been in conversation with these guys when the whole USD thing happened. So they are willing to, they agreed, and today they just confirmed it. So we'll be doing that too. So yeah, let me know whosoever is interested. Actually, just let me do one thing. Let me pin that thing here. But before anything, just go check their website, research. There are a lot of good researchers here. I hope Mandeeves was here because he always had a complaint that why I don't get whitelisted. So I thought he'll be here right now. So I'll give this thing to you, and whosoever it is, I'll collect a list of the details and everything, and then I'll directly put you guys on the whitelist without any headache or so.
Should we DM you? Are your DMs open? Or
yeah, my DMs are open. Let me just post this thing here. This is actually, we ran this last week, a few days back. Here, I have just posted this thing. The project is called Cross the Ages. Anyone, and they, by the way, not only just the NFTs, any NFT holder, like it's not a very high priced whitelist NFT. It's like a $500, the premium pack of these cards, which you can merge together later and make even a more exclusive card. So they will have a metaverse, and all of these guys who get the whitelist spot will get also the metaverse plot. When they launch one, this card will come into the character. And yeah, sorry, I forgot one unique concept about this particular project is that they're not only giving you the NFTs, they'll also deliver to your home, basically the NFC chip, physical cards. So which will help you like track down the original owner with a unique identification code, which will help you track down the original holders and owners of this particular project, or I mean like the card. And so, and also nobody can steal your NFT, or nobody can really steal your card. So it will, he will need to steal both together. So because they will have a unique identification number linked to the NFT code itself. Yeah, and also one more thing they're doing is like any NFT holders will have tokens at the pre-launch airdrop to their wallet. So I've just pinned this thing here. Can you do me one favor? Just whosoever is registering on that link, if you go through that, just mention like in the comments, like, you know, for example, at Sefi, just mention like @Sefi, or Sefi space, Sefi Twitter space. I'll just note down those guys, and I will just give the allocations, whitelist allocations to them. But yeah, just go into their website before anything, just research. You guys will definitely love it.
Very cool. So it's the M chain
is basically our company name. So we have so this is like the previous Gleam list, but you can still use it. So we have another mint on the coming Friday. So we had one yesterday. We have another mint on Friday. Then we'll be finalizing it.
Can I have a question, if you don't mind? I'm just wondering.
Please.
Everybody's on board, you said, as far as Harry Potter?
You can go check their website and check the authors, check the graphic designers. They have around 150 plus designers on this particular project. So it's a massive team of around 200-300 people working on one project. So unfortunately, they don't make much of a noise there, but they just kept it quiet. If you read it, I don't think there has been any other project like this. You can just go through the website and understand the concept. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, thanks.
One more thing, sorry, Sefi. We will host another space. I have standard packs, which are just for people or kids to use those standard packs. And then you can actually use them to play the game. So they will also have small value. I'm planning to give away almost like, I have an allocation of 100, but we have another campaign, but I'll keep 50 at least for another space here. Those ones will be just free, just for you to play the game.
Yep, cool. Yeah, follow him and see what sort of follow-up activities are happening there. Cool. Let's see. Immel, did I say your name right?
Yes. Hello, thanks for giving me time to speak. I just want to ask a question, if anybody got the answer, because I'm not very sure what Luna 2 is, how they are going to airdrop, and if we are going to get some coins too or not, because I actually bought, and I think many people like me, we bought when it was like prices were like dropping like on $5 or something, you know, and then it went to zero basically. So is there any I'm not sure if the people like me are going to get any kind of airdrops are we
where
will be
able to. Where do you have your Luna now? Is it on Exchange or on your wallet?
Yes, sir. It is on Binance, basically.
It's pretty much useless on the Exchange. If you want to try to get in on the snapshot, my understanding is you need to transmit that to your wallet and hold it there for snapshot purposes.
So, do we need to create some new wallet on Binance, or is it somewhere, or it's like somewhere else?
No, you need you're going to need to have a TerraStation wallet. So, just download the TerraStation app from the App Store, create yourself a wallet, and then transmit it to that, and that'll get you qualified.
But I'm just wondering, suppose like if I bought like a 2,000 coins on that time, it was like $10,000 or something. It's a zero basically now. I even less than that something. Is it going to be? I'm not sure that how they are going to calculate those like coins or suppose if like somebody bought for like a $5 after when it's like price like.
Let me clarify that for you. So if you look up at the pin up top, your kids are kind of losing.
Sorry, Matt.
Just hit pause for a second. Hit your mic pause.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Fine. You can speak. I can.
Yeah. So if you look at the top of the tweets up here, the terrarity.io.
Yeah.
There's an airdrop calculator there, so it'll tell you how much of the new Luna token that you're likely to receive with the number of old Luna tokens that you have. So there's a calculator. You can check it out. I don't know how accurate it is, but our estimation is that, you know, the new Luna, if you approximate based on current Luna, it should be worth probably around $3, maybe. So you can calculate how much your holdings might be worth. Again, this is all kind of like, I don't know how accurate this stuff is. So just, you know, for whatever.
But it means like if somebody bought when it was on 0.001, they are better off than people like who bought on $5 or $10.
Right now, we talked about this earlier. The cheapest way to get the highest allocation if you're doing this would be to get like really cheap UST and transmit it to your wallet. Now, if you already have Luna, it probably does not help you to convert that to UST now. It doesn't make any difference.
Okay, yeah.
At the same time, you might be better off. If you're going to do anything else added to this, you probably want to do it after Terra 2 opens, and then you can decide at that point what a good pricing is. We kind of talked about this a few times today. And it's kind of complicated,
It depends on your goals. Like if your goal is to make the Luna 2 token, if your goal is to get the Luna 2 token, you're going to play it differently than if your goal is to like maintain value with what you have right now. It just depends on what you're shooting for, I think.
But what is going to happen with this old Luna? Are they still going to stay on like an exchanging and then people are going to trade this, or this will be like end of that Luna? It would turn into a whatever they're gonna call it.
Trevor's here. Maybe Trev knows. Trev, you have an idea about the old token? What's gonna happen?
Hey guys, how we doing?
Hey Trev, good.
Oh, for the old token. I mean, it's a legacy token at this point. You know, it'll still be a token, assuming that there's enough validators to run the network. But I mean, it's effectively just gonna be whatever's on chain. You know. And it'll be up to projects if they're going to port tokens over. It really depends. So a lot of stuff is up in the air right now. And I'd encourage people, I know people bought at certain prices. I'd like to think about it in terms of like, if you bought the token at some point, right, and it depreciated, I mean, you took the risk to buy something, right? We all kind of did. So there's a lot of speculators piling in, but there's no promise of anything happening, right? So it's all just kind of up in the air. So do what's best for yourself, you know?
Okay. Cheers, matey, guys. Thank you very much for your help, actually. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. It's a weird situation for someone who just happened to buy it.
who just went on an exchange, had no idea what was going on, and just like pushed some buttons and bought some coins.
Yeah, because so many people were actually like thinking, oh, because nobody actually dreamed that it is going to go on zero. People think it's a really good opportunity to buy on cheap prices. And then next morning you wake up and then you just saw your mobile.
These are speculators piling in. Like I was in at 130. And like I all the way up to 130 from the beginning, and like I got completely zeroed out, you know. So yeah, you have to think about it. You're buying $5, you know. Like a lot of us got wrecked really hard. Not that it's a contest, but like you got to think about.
I think I myself and many other people learned a very hard lesson. I think so in for future, I think that would be good. But definitely, but I was actually thinking, do you know when they wanted to do these airdrops, they should have actually calculated based how much people actually bought.
Yeah.
How much
let's not get into should or shouldn't, because you're going to end up on one side or the other.
Yeah.
So let's not get into that, because that's just a mud throwing contest and nobody wins.
All right. Okay. That's fine, guys. Cheers. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what we've been talking about today is really sort of like optimizing whatever airdrop I do or don't get. I don't even know how much you're going to get, because I have like some of mine was in, you know, Prism primitives, and some of it was bonded Luna on Anchor, and different sort of like, you know, a lot of my UST was locked up in various lock drops and in various pools. I don't know if any of that's going to really be counted. I'm presuming for the time being that I'm getting nothing. And, you know, whatever I get, I'm just going to cross my fingers at this point. That's kind of the situation I'm in.
Yeah, I kind of just assume that I lost everything. And if I get anything out of it, I'm going to be super, super jazzed. So any of you guys out there that are thinking like, oh, I'm going to make my money back, like, don't bank on that. Like, realistically, don't. Don't ape in if you don't have it. Don't. I mean, not that this is advice at all, I suppose I should say, but like it's a reminder that crypto is just speculative, same with stocks and same with everything else. So you're taking a risk, so always take that into consideration, no matter how stable everything is, or it's a stable coin, or like you see like it's going so well. Like we were really optimistic because everything was going really well for us, and I think we need to temper our expectations and kind of live in reality with a little bit of realism here and there, you know. But we need to
remain optimistic. We kind of talked about the fact that like this new layer one that's being created, essentially it's not really a fork, it's just a new layer one with an airdrop distribution. Correct. And you know, there's a lot of potential for things to happen there. It's going to be you know, it's going to have like a totally new valuation. It's going to have the usual like low market cap volatility. There's still a lot of attention on it. So I think there is going to be some capital inflow. There will be some LPs that people have an opportunity to participate in, that, you know, degens being degens, you know, some people like to do that. So I think just this should be looked at as basically a brand new situation. Imagine like this chain was opening and you knew nothing else. And you had to do your own research and figure out what's going on from scratch. That's how I'm kind of thinking of it myself. And, you know, we were strategizing a little bit today about like what would be a good market cap for this new token. And I think our feeling is that somewhere between a, you know, 4 billion market cap being probably overpriced and something like $500 million market cap being undervalued is probably where this is going to land. So I'm just using that general guidance, like, or not guidance, but I'm using that as my template for making decisions on what I think is a good price to buy the new token at. So there's your airdrop and what that's worth, and then there's a totally different decision about whether someone wants to try to like quote unquote recover using new funds and that sort of thing. So yeah, everyone's got to do what's good for them. Everyone has different like residual capital left over, because some people are so wrecked they don't have anything. Don't go use your lunch money on crypto at this point. If you have so little left after a crash that, you know, you're trying to gamble your more, you know, whatever's left in your life, and you don't have that speculative money, then just don't do anything, right? Like, take care of yourself first. worry about where your income's going coming from, and don't fuck around in crypto until you have that straightened out. Yeah, that's my concept. Go ahead, John.
Somebody made a million bucks off of.
Oh, did he get rugged? Did I get rugged?
No, John. Go ahead. Say that again. Someone made $1 million off of what?
A million off 10,000. When they figured out that Luna was getting relisted on Binance, when it got delisted and then it got relisted. But Luna was a great project. That's all I want to say. I mean, we were all, whatever happened, nobody expected this. It's just like, yeah. It's like when we were all super bullish at the end of the last year, and nobody thought, oh, it's going to 100,000. But that doesn't even compare to Luna. Like, nobody thought this was going to happen. It was a shame.
Financial stuff aside, I must say, I really enjoyed using it. Like, I really enjoyed hanging out with all the people involved. I really enjoyed, like, the experience of it. It's almost like withdrawal now. Like your life's all fucked up, not just because of money, but because, like, you enjoyed using the platform and you liked the NFTs and you liked the experience, and it really felt like finally DeFi was fucking going somewhere, right? So it's like an emotional, like, loss that's different from just a monetary loss. People, like, you know, I know the phrase lunatics is just a bunch of fun. It's like a play on the word Luna, but, like, you know, the people that really loved it really, really loved it. Right. So, and, you know, a broken heart is a much, sort of harder problem to mend than, you know, sometimes harder to mend than, like, a broken wallet sometimes. And, I think, like, on the Terra V2, like, all the builders and everybody, regardless of all the shenanigans with various airdrop concerns, I think are trying to sort of, like, I hope they're trying to create or maintain the ethos that we had with or without the UST element. You know, we could, you know, USDC is not as fun. It's not censorship resistant, and there's some, like, philosophical concerns. But as far as, like, the use of the platform, you know, it could be made useful again is, I guess, my point. And hopefully there's a lot of fun in the future, and maybe some financial gain as well. But yeah, Trev, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going away. Luna and UST had honestly, I mean, they were just vehicles and they were just products. And it brought us together. And for some reason, at this point in time, maybe it was gas fees from ETH that drove us all fucking here, and the shit projects on BSC that pushed us all into this ecosystem. But for some reason, we have a lot of these really passionate, really impact-driven individuals here. And it's honestly, it's the people that have that are Terra. It's not TFL. It's not USC. It's not Luna. It's the crazy community and really innovative and really forward-thinking community that made Terra. We're crazy to believe that we could have solved banking and charity forever, and, you know, who knows what the fuck else. You know, that's who we are. Yeah, fucking laugh. But what I can tell you is all the builders are in the background right now trying to basically reform, kind of reform an organization to move into the future for Terra V2. I can't guarantee you it'll happen, but we have a lot of the projects, a lot of the validators preparing to create like an organized structure for decision making and all sorts of stuff, like, on the new chain. And that's, you know, with all projects, protocols, stakeholders, and most importantly, the community represented. So we're still kind of hashing out, like, a light framework for that. And that's not even, like, we're not even there yet. There's still a lot of splintering going on, trying to figure out where we're going and how we're going to get there. But that should all be hashed out in the next, you know, week or two, I guess, coming up on the 27th, when the Genesis block, I think, is scheduled to launch. but yeah, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic, but, you know, I'm always going to try to figure out what the best thing is for all of our people, is all I'm really going to try to do. So whether it's this chain, the next chain, or, you know, maybe the same chain. Who the fuck knows? I doubt it's that, but you know, it's how we move forward together, build forward together, and like really get back to building some cool shit instead of thinking about like the ashes and around us and the house that just fucking burnt down. I think it's we're all hurting, but we need to pick each other up and, you know, start building forward. So that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, in other words, whatever airdrops you are going to get, like someone's got to make those things valuable at some point. And users make that valuable. New capital comes in if you have something useful built there. And, you know, and the more people involved with doing that, like the more likely that's going to happen. And at a faster pace. So just like usual, like there's a lot of roles for like community people to be, you know, kind of helping out or thinking about things, following tweets or like following projects and or supporting them in some form or fashion. That's what kind of creates the network effect ultimately is the crowd involved. I think OC had his hand up and comment. Go ahead, OC.
Thank you, Sefi. And thanks to everyone here and to all the community. I have just one, not question, but almost improvement point here for the current time to the Terra organization or the foundation. Why? I mean, as you mentioned, this is a new product, okay? And as you may know, when you have great product at certain point of time, this may be improved. And we can imagine that situation happening now for Terra. But the lack here is that there is a lack of communication from the lab. Okay, and this I didn't understand why. And I believe you are a marketing guy. And when you want to release a new product, you have to communicate enough before it burns. Before it's released to the market, and neither the Terra official account communicate on that. I've seen yesterday on the website that there is in the homepage, okay, Terra V2, but no one communicate on it, on social medias and so on and so forth.
I don't think we know that much yet about the details. So I think the problem is they don't want to keep on saying things and then having to change it over and over again. So I bet that's probably it. And maybe there just hasn't been enough time to really like make material for it too. So I don't know, Trev.
I don't have any information. I have the same issue. It's always been a TFL thing where like there's no communication channel. So one thing we're going to implement, or at least try to, is open mm-hmm. fluid and bi-directional communication channels. Mm-hmm. And also what I can say is I won't defend them, because I think I agree with a lot of the things that have been said. Mm-hmm. But hindsight is 2020, right? But one thing I can say is I'm pretty sure all of their lawyers just quit. So if I was an org and I wanted to put out statements, I would get them vetted by lawyers, and like I don't know if they have any left. So I have no idea, because I don't have any information, but I could guess that might be part of it.
As you may know, even if the product, and we know that, not mention, big companies in the IT world or in the tech world can do that. And there is one, not to mention the name of it, but we use it every day in our PCs. This operating system, okay, but you can communicate even if the product is not finished. You know what I mean? Just to say that there is a new Terra coming on, blah blah blah, with new features, and
and some of the components are being hashed out by the builders and some individual groups. So I think part of it is there's just a lot of different people working on different things to kind of get this going. I don't think there's a cohesive answer to anything yet.
Okay.
If there was, by the way, if I heard anything for sure, I would just tell you, right? Like, I don't really, I don't have any problem with that. But I don't think there's like sufficient detail. Like, people have ideas and they're throwing them around, but I don't know that any of them have like been written down as like permanent anything in terms of vision.
Yeah. Okay.
We're at the point where I think we have enough people that are gathering projects and validators where in the next week or so we may move into like a decision making process. But again, that's up in the air, assuming people want to move forward together, which is still yet to be decided. So keep in mind that if you're expecting projects to be updating, like they'll update their own community, but also everybody just lost things like funding and VCs are trying to get back their fucking money or not, you know, sending out their money for runway. So keep in mind that that's happening, and a lot of projects don't have runway, or they do, and now like they don't know if they're going to stay. So they're also weighing all of those options. So try to be considerate of projects. If you guys are like reaching out to specific projects, I guarantee you a shit ton of people are reaching out to them. And like, honestly, one project was about to launch in like 2 days, like after this shit happened. And they're like, what do we do now? So there's a lot going on outside of like your own bag. So just always try to be considerate of that. I would say in terms of, you know, where you're at and how you're engaging. I mean, everyone got fucked by this thing, you know.
I'm familiar with the ITIL, okay, since I'm developer, but now I'm like lead or manager, okay, in the tech world. But we are me and my team. We are used to use the ITIL foundation processes, okay. When you have an incident, you have to communicate. Even if you have this is a critical incident management you have to manage. And as we can see, there is a lot of scams, a lot of fake communications. Myself, I find myself, answering or tackling those fake news, okay, and about Terra. And then maybe, in the Terra Foundation labs, they are not used to handle such situations, or they don't have a crisis management plan. Okay, and that will come with communication plan as well. That was my point, Sefi, and I can understand what happening now, and what about the communication, about what the guys, when it would be released, maybe it will be postponed, we don't know. Okay, but communication help, the product, when it releases, it will find the users that can consume it. Myself, just to let you know, I will hold 50% of my stock. Maybe I will sell the 50%, but I will hold 50%. And if there is a communication plan, maybe I will hold more.
Yeah, I mean, what you're talking about is just the communication layer, and it's something that, you know, I'm very critical of them for as well, because communication needs to go both ways. That's one thing that needs to improve immediately in the new structure or org that'll be forming, if it forms, with all the creatives and all the builders and all the infra partners, anybody who's a stakeholder that, if it's truly community driven, if this org is codified and does come together. Communication channels are paramount, and we put a light framework in place already. But again, that's getting ahead of the ball. We're not there yet, but communication layers are the most important thing in terms of communicating with the community, with the specific sectors, whether you're the NFT community through the NFT channels, protocol and yield through the protocol and yield channels, infra, DevOps, and validators. That's a focus, but it's true. And I think we all know it, but like it's something that does need to get worked on. So point well taken. And
thank you very much, Sefi and Jeff, for your answers.
Of course.
Yeah, no problem. And by the way, I don't work for TFL. I don't work for anybody. I don't have any specialized alphabet shit. In all seriousness, I just like hanging out in Twitter spaces and fucking around. That's pretty much spot. So
me neither. I don't either.
So like I like just kind of hanging out, hearing alpha from people, and trying to find out as much information as I can, you know, about this or any other project. I think it's interesting. Sometimes if you're hanging out a while, people are like, whoa, you shilled this project. I'm like, I just posted like what shit I bought. Like I don't tell you to go do anything. So I always it's like, no matter how many caveats you have, I think what it is like the funny thing on Twitter is, and I've only been playing with Twitter for like a couple of years, now, or maybe a year and a half. And it's funny that like there's like a certain point after which like an account gets to a certain size. And next thing you know, like
it doesn't matter what you say. It's like you talk about some coin. Next thing you know, a bunch of people want to go buy that shit. Like, just like, I'm like, you know, they don't even like do their own research. Like, oh, he probably knows what he's doing. Let's go buy that. I can assure you, I frequently buy things at the wrong price. And if you buy when I do, like, your shit is going to go down. That's for damn sure. Like, that's like, that seems more than evident in this particular instance. So.
Sounds like you're shorty. Anyway, so
everyone should always be careful with their own money. Like the other thing too is like, just because someone's talking about something doesn't mean their entire net worth is in it either, by the way. Like, that's not necessarily the case. So just always be aware of that. Like, you know, I've been investing in whatnot for like, you know, 20 to 30 years now, like since I was a kid, basically. So this is not my first rodeo, and it's not the first thing that's gone to zero necessarily either, by the way. So like, I've had, you know, stocks do that, you know, from time to time, things like that. So, you know, and I don't like, I don't ever quit working. Like, you know, my intention is to work until I'm dead. And basically, you know, I don't spend a lot of money. So I tend to always, like, every month when I'm working, I tend to invest in things and save for the family or whatever. And so I'm, you know, that's how I'm able to buy dips and stuff, by actually keeping a job. I'm not like trying to retire on crypto. I'm not trying to retire on any of my assets or any of that shit. Like I don't want to sit around and do nothing until I'm dead, regardless of how much money I have. That's just not my goal at all. So I, you know, usually like during my J job, you know, I run, you know, big teams of practicing physicians. I teach and stuff. And basically I continue to do that. And I probably will do that indefinitely until I can't do it anymore. So, you know, when I talk about crypto, I do it because I think there's a vision there. I think there's a lot of cool stuff that can happen. And I think there are elements of it that will change the world. But people should always be like careful with their own money, and not necessarily like, you know, there's not, I don't like the phrase like only invest what you can lose. That's probably the wrong way to look at it. You know, only, you know, only buy things when the risk of owning it in terms of time preference and price action is consistent with your lifestyle and what your goals are. Whatever that means to you, it's going to vary from person to person. But, you know, the goal is not to get wrecked on, you know, any one investment or anything else. Right. So. Just be
can I ask you an interesting question, Seth?
Yeah, go ahead.
Have you ever FOMO'd into something? If so, when was the last time, and how bad, and how did it go?
all the time. Like, if someone tells me about something today, I'm like, fuck it, I'm gonna buy some. Like, you know, it's like, I don't really overthink these things too much. My sense is like, if I learn something about something interesting, I might just simply buy a little bit of it. So I have a little bit of like skin in the game, and then I'm kind of watching it. Right. And then as price goes down, I might, you know, increase my allocation in it, especially if the more research I do, the more interesting the thing becomes. Right. Like, so I, you know, like the first time I bought Luna was like $16, maybe after it like jumped to like, what was it, 22 or 24 in the beginning, like last year. And then I bought more at like 12, and then I bought more at 5. And I happened to just buy a lot more at 5 on the, you know, at what was basically close to the bottom at the time. So like, my portfolio did go up quite a bit because of that. But like the first time I bought it, you know, I didn't wait long enough. I didn't think it was going to go to $5. What the hell? So, you know, so it's easy to underestimate both how high something can go and underestimate how low something can go, or overestimate both of those things too. It's really tough to get exact timing. So, but that's why I typically use like logarithmic scale charts, because they demonstrate how wickedly low something can go and how wickedly high something can go simultaneously on speculative type assets. And so that's why I kind of do that. And you know, so if I buy like $100 of something today, I know that I need to be willing to put in like 10K worth at the bottom, right? That's how my thinking goes. So I might buy a tiny amount of something just to sort of like look at it and keep an eye on it. And then I'm watching for
potentially lower prices and things of that nature. It depends on market conditions and other things too, obviously. But if you start really, really tiny, like tiny as in like 10 bucks, a dollar, you know, like basically nothing, then when it goes down and you'll see the percentage difference on your portfolio without having a bunch of technical tools. So let's say you bought, you know, you're like, oh, you know what? Rune sounds interesting. I'm going to buy a dollar worth. Okay, fine. So now like your dollar is worth 90 cents on your asset page. And you say, oh, look, it's 10% down. I might get a little bit more. Or, oh, look, it, you know, my $10 is now down to $4. And now you can go really, really crazy, right? So if you have like tiny amounts of whatever it is that you buy, Chad's down there laughing because I think that's exactly what happened to Rune. but if on a percentage basis, if you have a tiny amount in your portfolio, it allows you to have a reference point to watch where the hell you're going. And then when things are really, really down, then you can say, okay, I'm going to, you know, put a little bit more serious amount in here. So, you know, you don't have to have a fancy trading app and all this other shit. All you have to do is a tiny amount, like a dollar or $10 or whatever it is, park it there, and you'll have a percentage basis of where your portfolio is just by eyeballing it, right? Like at 10 bucks, you don't have to pull out a calculator to figure out how much you're down. If you're, you know, $10 asset is now worth six, you know, you're down 40%. That makes it a little bit easier. So that's kind of how I look at it. So when you say FOMO, like, you know, have I thrown like mad money at something before at the wrong price? Let me think. Yeah, from time to time. So, and it's actually more painful if you put a lot of money in something and it drops 50% or 80% or whatever, right? Like, so.
Or 99% or
100%. Or 99%. Yeah, that's never good. So yeah, it depends on what you mean by FOMO. But usually, like, the funny thing is, as soon as you hear about a cool new project, right? By definition, you're in FOMO time, right? Because you are interested enough in it that you're over there clicking buttons, getting ready to buy this thing. And, you know, if you haven't really like addressed the price chart, you're not even willing to wait for it to go lower. You figure, well, if I don't want to miss out, so I want to make sure that I get it at some price before it goes up, right? Then you wind up pushing a button and getting some. So you're way more likely to FOMO if you buy something right after you hear about it. But on the other hand, if you buy none when you hear about something interesting, you're way less likely to be involved at all, which then what happens is you just wasted all your time learning about whatever project, right? So like no exposure is one set of problems. And being like crippled by, you know, indecision and doing nothing is one set of problems. Doing too much with too little information at the wrong time is a different set of problems. That's kind of how I think about it. What do you do, Trev?
I mean, I do a heavy layer of due diligence if it's something that I'm really interested in. But the thing is, I'm over-engaged, as you know. So at this point, like, if I hear about something and it makes sense to me, like, I'll just... Typically, somebody that I trust comes to me and goes, have you heard about this? I'm like, yes. Should I get it? They're like, I got some. I'm like, great. That's all I need to know. And then I'll go pick up speculatively a little bit, and then I'll circle back. But I'll say the one thing that I do just kind of blindly buy outside of that, or like the interns are very good at like guilting me into not being on whitelists or buying NFTs. So like I get shit from them for not having them. So I ended up with like, I think I have like 700 NFTs for things that I probably don't even want. But mostly it was because they're like, look at my crazy NFT. Like, you do have one? I'm like, no. But then I have to go and get one. Otherwise, I don't hear the end of it. So, you know, it's
so you're getting peer pressured into buying NFTs.
It's like reverse. Imagine if interns bullied bullied you. Like it's like reverse. I don't know.
Well, like I had, so the NFT crowd, like Archangel and some of the other guys that are like really loving NFTs, like just got me into NFTs. Like right before the massive crash of Terra, like within 2 weeks, right? So like now I bought some random ones. I didn't buy that much. I bought some of the like Deviance Faction and a few other ones. I you know, some of the obviously some of the other well-known random ones. Anyway, so I bought some, and you know, I felt like, okay, you know, I'll learn about them and see what projects are doing. I wanted to be able to assess better like NFT platforms, understand how they work. And, you know, just get the technical nuances down so I can not so much to make it as a big investment, but just to like understand it better. And also just understand the mechanics of how the like wallet interfaces work, all of that. Because without knowing that, like, it's hard to assess new projects that I'm asking about. And you just don't have the right experience if you're not doing it right. Mm-hmm. So I did it just to have like some like physical experience with it and try it out. And of course, now the NFTs I actually have are just, they're sitting in my wallet. At least they didn't technically go to zero. But even NFTs, like, I looked at it from like, okay, how much am I willing to pay for this purely as a piece of art? How much am I willing to pay for this like as a gaming tool, like in Deviant's Faction or something? And then like stop right there, right? I don't think about the art as like, oh, I need this to moon and like my, you know, my Terran needs to go to $1 million.
I just don't think about that.
Yeah, I just don't think of it that in that way. And you know, like, when's the last time NFT platforms have had their fucking layer one go to shit, right? Like, this is not a thing until now.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of the projects are working on porting over to the second chain, or they're moving to like Stargaze Zone, which is interesting because I think the mistake that we made is we made like a chain that like was trying to do everything, which I don't think we have those in the future. I think we have things like Stargaze Zone where like the entire layer's kind of crafted and designed to fit one purpose, which is like NFTs, like Stargaze Zone. And it allows, I think, for less attack vectors and less complexity at the base layer. And then you can innovate directly into like one specific sector. And then you just IBC or wormhole or gravity bridge all that shit together. And you have a lot of focused energy in like each specific ecosystem. And I think we haven't even seen innovation take off yet. I think that's really where we're going to land. And that'll be really, really interesting. And getting back to the NFTs, I know GPs are, I think, committed validator-wise to the new chain, which makes you think GPs are moving to the other chain. And I think all the other projects are still figuring their stuff out. But I think a lot of them will land over there, especially the blue chip ones, if you can consider blue chippy. So focused energy, I think, is where we're headed for a lot of these chains.
One question?
Yeah, go ahead, John.
Sorry, brother. Just with that, was it Stargate or Stargaze? Because, yeah, I think I looked into that project. Is that a DeFi project? And then I was just going to say with NFTs,
Stargaze.
And we have whoever, Dan, is that a Stargaze project? No, it's not. It looks like a Stargaze. It is a Stargaze project. It's PFP. Maybe he knows.
Dan, you there?
That's Goblin Tom.
Oh. Got it. Well, they're definitely just NFTs on chain. I think they're still working out some of the Gov stuff, but like it's all NFTs. They launched their marketplace, I think, on Monday, I want to say. And it's only NFTs right now, I think.
Yeah, I got my airdrop for Stargaze for being an Atom staker, and I was able to get on there and like play on there. I need to get back on there for the marketplace to like do the rest of the little tasks that you need to get to your airdrops. But Stargaze is pretty slick. I haven't tried the marketplace yet. Like I said, I need to do that. But the concept of a specialized chain specific for NFTs on Cosmos makes a lot of sense. You know, and then like Terra, like in my mind, is more like finance specific apps and dApps as opposed to, you know, maybe some of the other like sub activities. And when you have NFTs built into the base layer, you can do a lot of interesting things with making sure that metadata and all sorts of other important pieces of the puzzle put together. And it's a lot easier to build like marketplaces and other things on chains where like the metadata is really, really well designed.
Right. I think the biggest travesty is like we didn't see Andromeda come out, which is, you know, would have been out like maybe sometime this year, which is effectively anybody can basically build a smart contract piece by piece in a modular fashion and just mint the contract. So you could slash dev costs by like 90%, 80%, shit like that. It's kind of like a plug and play kind of thing. So I mean that was coming. I think it still is coming, but we'll have to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, I hope improvements that, to be made, right?
Yeah, I hope Andromeda Protocol does make it to Terra V2. That was one of the big things people were waiting for. Sigma looks really sharp. Nebula Protocol looks super useful. That trio of, like, you know, of items was stuff I was really super interested in. And finally, some of the cool shit was coming before this happened. So I'm kind of disappointed after waiting. It's like canceling Christmas or some shit, right? Like, that's how it feels when all that cool stuff is coming. And now who knows, like, how delayed that's going to be.
The thing that delays us is the Prime Trust layer. Like, I've been trying to get information regarding that specific layer. And that's the key to on and off ramps. And I'm not familiar with on and off ramps on other chains. I've been focused on all of our Terra innovation. Like, are there frictionless, low-fee on and off ramps on other chains? Like, because I know Prime Trust supports USDC as well, and they just added USD when all this shit fucking happened. I'm not familiar with other ramps. Like, do you guys know if, like, Polygon or AVAX or any of these other ones have a direct off?
I'm not too sure. I've been looking at what was it, Chai, CHIA or whatever. Looking at that, I'm looking at a lot of different layer ones.
Huh. Yeah. Hold on. Degenerate's coming on. Dan Lynch, did you have a comment or question? I know you've been waiting a while. Are you still there? I'm not sure if Dan's actually around or not. Degenerate, what's up?
Oh, just for Trev's question, there are pretty easy on ramps on, like, Solana and ETH. I don't know about any other chains, but I know with both of those ones, you can go directly in your wallet. Like, for Solana, right in your Phantom wallet, they just have a button for like, put in your debit card, and you can on ramp it directly in there. And then I think with ETH, it's the same thing. I think it's through, like, MoonPay or something like that. But yeah, I don't think it's quite as low fees as it was on Terra, but there are some on ramps definitely on the other chains.
Yeah, those are as far as I know, all the other ramps are cash advances or something, not directly, like, from your bank account, or has that changed?
I'm not sure if it's directly from your bank account, but I believe, like, you can use a debit card, I'm pretty sure, and just put your card info in and buy it right from there. Like, right in your non-custodial wallet.
Well, we need Terra to come back, because we all love this project here. I can feel that. Or, I mean, we heard it earlier, and I'm definitely one. We all lost money, but, you know, this was a great project, and we can't say it wasn't.
Yeah, we're working on it. The builders aren't going to take an L on this. We're not going to take it sitting down, so we'll figure it out.
Yeah, I've already seen Cabo, or I forget if it's Cabo or Cato, but the on-ramp for Terra already said they're going to be sticking around, so I'm sure they'll probably do something with, like, USDC or something like that, or maybe directly to Luna. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's the only support layer left for Prime Trust, if I remember correctly. Don't quote me on that, though.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was part 4 of the 5-part CeFi space, talking about Terra Luna 2, different strategies, proposals, all sorts of stuff. Recorded on Saturday, May 21st, 2022. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. And if you want to keep listening, head on over to TerraSpaces.org/donate and show some support. Digging in the dirt, trying to find the treasure. Learning how to mix this business with pleasure. I'm kicking a lecture, spitting conjecture. High as a bird while I'm flipping the gesture. Living like a jester, investing these extras. Dissecting a mess, of eagle looking headstrong. Infinitesimal, the spitting is next world. And if you don't agree, well then I'm afraid you're dead wrong. So leave the mess hall and clean your plates up. I can't believe the rest of y'all feed on makeup. Bereavement breakup to rearrange your wake up. Big ol' bloody mess like a scene from Braveheart. Driving race cars that beat the fate. It's hard to meet your maker when the features ain't marked. Trying to slide underneath the paywall. I'm afraid this motherfucker's gone AWOL.
You had best unfuck yourself, or I will unscrew your head and kick down your neck.
Sir, yes, sir.
Private Joker, why did you join my beloved gold?
Sir, to kill, sir.
No, you're a killer.
Sir, yes, sir.
Let me see your war face.
Sir,
you got a war face?
Ah,
that's a war face. Now let me see your war face.
Living on the
the earth trying to mine some headspace. Give a little gift like I'm lifted dead weights. The risk of resting kicks the nest egg. Square in the nuts, y'all feeling testy. The breeze swept in, no need of resting. The least depressing, so sweet but messy. I need the best day to keep professing and hope my body doesn't leave behind a red stain. Pouring out little liquor for the dead states while the rest wait and bleed domestic. No means to gestate, breeds the best cake. Beauty on the back of the queen she just date. So take a little dive down a K-hole while I flip the B-roll right into A-roll and make the payroll go a little further. Replace the merger with the tainted version.
I'm a snowball!
Spaces.